理课堂听 class.com
Advanced Studio Classroom is on the air. Continuing with America's first landscape architect, Frederick Olmsted, who left his mark on America's landscape. Hi, everyone, and welcome to Advanced Studio Classroom. My name is Troy, and we're continuing with today's article on America's first landscape architect. His name is Frederick Law Olmsted. And back with me in the studio are our three hosts from yesterday's program, Ethan, Phil, and Bill. Hi, guys.
Hi.
Hi,
hello.
Troy.
Now, did we learn anything interesting from yesterday's article or lesson about this man, Frederick Law Olmsted? Perhaps we have some new listeners today, and they might not be aware of who this man is.
Well, the bulk of our article yesterday was talking about the Biltmore Estate, and this is just a magnificent grounds area that Olmsted helped to design, and most of it is private parkland that is natural forest.
Okay. Well, and we're just talking now about one out of about 550 projects that this man was involved with around the world in landscaping and designing. Obviously, New York Central Park, probably one of the most famous parks in the United States, if not the world, was designed and supervised by this man, Frederick Olmsted. Stanford University campus was another one of his designs. And give us some other place names of areas where he designed.
Well, he designed parks in Philadelphia and, of course, we know in New York, Central Park, but also Riverside and Morningside Parks in New York. In Detroit, he designed parks there. We're going to talk about the Capitol in Washington, D.C. today, Stanford University, as you mentioned, and also areas in Boston around the harbor. So really all around the country.
He planned city parks for Seattle, Baltimore, Maryland, Atlanta, Georgia, Buffalo, New York, Rochester, New York, Louisville, among many other cities. This man really got around. He also did the campus for Berkeley. Imagine that. Not just Stanford University, but Berkeley as well. He designed the campus. Well, we have pictures on page 14 of New York's Central Park, and you can see then on page 15 here a beautiful picture of the mansion or the Biltmore Estate. Where you've been. You've been there, Phil.
Yeah, the Biltmore Estate is in western North Carolina. I grew up about 40 miles from there. It is the largest private home or mansion in America, a very, very beautiful place.
So this man, Olmsted, was an American original. He's actually a 19th century success story because he traveled widely. It said he traveled across the United States many times. He also spent time in Europe as well as China.
That's what we learned yesterday, Troy, is he was a visionary who had many experiences traveling all over the world, learning designs, and he left his mark, one of our terms from yesterday, even after 100 years after his death.
I read somewhere where it said that he had a vision of the American landscape, and it was to become for him in his designs a reflection of the United States national character. So he often would use broad, open skies. He liked large spaces and working with those large spaces. And it, as we read yesterday, it became his canvas. When we talk about a canvas, painters use canvas to paint on. Well, landscape architects, of course, use land space as their canvas to design on as well.
So it's almost like he was painting on the landscape. And the interesting thing was he worked together in concert with nature. So he didn't want to destroy the natural landscape, but he wanted to shape it to make it more beautiful.
Mm. And one of the things we talked about was that he had such a good ability to envision what was going to happen, that he could look at a piece of land and see what it would look like 100, 200 years down the road. And as we look at the pictures, it's just beautiful.
Certainly a man who was very well gifted. And imagine, after having been involved in architectural landscape design for so many years, and then being called upon by your federal government, the United States called upon him to design the grounds around the United States Capitol. Wow! What an honor to leave a lasting legacy upon the United States by being privileged to design those grounds. And that's what we're looking at today in the lesson. We're on page 15 in your Advanced magazine. If you'll turn there, we'll now ask Marcy to begin reading the first half of today's lesson.
U.S. Capitol Grounds. Every day, Holly Shimizu, executive director of the U.S. Botanic Garden, looks out on Olmsted's crowning achievement, the design of the nearly 60 acres of grounds surrounding the U.S. Capitol. From 1874 to 1889, Olmsted supervised its planting, as well as the design of walkways, walls, lights, and other features. Olmsted provided spacious lawns and spectacular open views, keeping the Capitol building itself as the focal point of the grounds. But according to Shimizu, Olmsted's love of nature is manifested in the thousands of plants found here. He knew he had to first honor the building itself, but the plants were also very important, she says. Today, a wide variety of trees thrive on the grounds, including ginkgo, redbud, dogwood, and oak. These carefully selected, interesting plants make the Capitol grounds an arboretum, she says.
Thank you, Marcy. This is the Advanced Studio Classroom. We are now on page 15 in your Advanced magazine, looking at the next landscape design of the U.S. Capitol grounds. It was done by Frederick Law Olmsted. And we begin with the executive director of the U.S. Botanic Garden. Now, the U.S. Botanic Garden, of course, is actually a part of the U.S. Capitol grounds. The grounds themselves are very large, and included on these grounds is the Botanic Garden. And so we first hear from a person by the name of Holly Shimizu, who is the executive director of those botanic gardens. And what does she tell us?
Well, a botanic garden is an area where a wide range of plants is grown for scientific study, as well as the enjoyment and education of visitors.
Okay.
So she gets to look out on this crowning achievement of Olmsted's every day.
So he was not only good at just landscaping, but when you are a landscaper, you also need to have an understanding of variety of trees and plants and flowers that look well together. It's not enough to simply form the land or landscape it, but you also must have an eye and an understanding of plants.
Well, and she says it was his crowning achievement. And I really like that term because it gives the idea that it was probably his best work or one of the best things he designed, had the most importance. Obviously, the Capitol buildings are very important to the United States. And so this was his crowning achievement or one of the most important projects he ever undertook.
Now, the Capitol building itself was built in various stages between 1793 and 1963. So for a long period of time, the Capitol itself has been in design. And even today, there are still sometimes a redesigning that takes place. But based on the original design, it was first constructed, I understand, the building itself of sandstone. And then later they began to rebuilt the Capitol building using granite or marble. So I think it was then in 1857 when Congress in the United States began to expand because the United States began to grow as a country, I think after the Louisiana Purchase. So there was this growing Congress that was represented in Washington, D.C. So it meant that the place had to grow. And growing with it would be the surrounding landscape or grounds encompassing this area. And so we read here in 1874, Olmsted was responsible for supervising the design of these grounds.
Right. He supervised its planting as well as the design of walkways, walls, lights, and other features. So he was put in charge of designing the grounds around the Capitol, and he did it in a way not to take away from the building, but to maybe soften the building and give a more natural surroundings to it.
I really like the next paragraph. It talks about the spacious lawns and spectacular open views keep the Capitol building itself the focal point of the grounds. And I think this is really neat because the Capitol building is a symbol for the United States, also of it's the center of the government. It's where the power comes from. And he's using the landscape around it to give that image and contribute to that.
Now, the Capitol building itself is no small structure. It's huge. It's gigantic. I think there are over 500 rooms in the Capitol building. Of course, it is the place where Congress meets to do business. And when you stop and you realize the massive size of this place, how could anyone take a look at something that large and design terraces and trees and landforms and all that is necessary to make this place look beautiful? Well, it says that when he was finished doing it, of course, the Capitol building itself remained the focal point, the center of the work.
And you can see from 1874 to 1889, this was a 15-year project. So he had a long time to work on it, and probably changed his plan as the years went by.
Yeah, undoubtedly, I am sure that probably some of the first plans that he drafted, probably the design changed over time as others became involved in the project. But again, he had the experience and the vision for it, so he was the one who supervised it in that period of 15 years.
Yes, so over that time period, he would have the opportunity to come up with the plan, see what it looked like, and then if it wasn't quite what he wanted, then he could adjust it and change it.
Well, you know, in fact, Capitol Hill, it's called. We call it the U.S. Capitol Grounds because it encompasses, judicial buildings, the legislative buildings. It also encompasses many homes and businesses that are east of the United States Capitol. So all of that we would call these grounds. So they're actually very large. And Jenkins Hill, as it used to be called back in 1800, which is now Capitol Hill, is where the U.S. Capitol now sits. So you have the surrounding grounds around it, and it says, as we read, it has spacious lawns and spectacular open views. And so all of this just manifests Olmsted's love of nature. Okay. Now, can someone have a love of nature?
Sure, you can have a love of nature. And Phil had actually mentioned some of the projects Olmsted worked on before lends itself to what this article talks about. For instance, his work with Yosemite National Park in California and Niagara Falls in New York. So you can see he implements some of this nature into his landscape architecture.
Certainly a man who was a true conservationist, and he didn't want to destroy the landscape but find a way for the landscape to reflect its surrounding natural beauty. So he manifested that in thousands of the plants found here. It wasn't about looking for exotic plants in other places to import as much as it was to find the natural, the local plants within the area and use those plants to exploit the beauty of the grounds that he designed. So you can have a love of nature. You can have a love of cars. You can have a love of other hobbies. Some people say, well, I have a love of music. And for Olmsted, it was the love, of course, of beauty, of nature itself. So we see here he knew that he had to first honor the building itself, but the plants were also very important. Now, this is a quote from Holly Shimizu. She's the executive director of the U.S. Botanic Garden, and so she continues talking here in the article. And she says, today a wide variety of trees thrive on the grounds. What kind of trees are there?
Well, there's ginkgo, redbud, dogwood, and oak.
Okay. Now, I know that there are other kinds of trees there as well, such as the beautiful southern magnolias, which we'll read in the second half of the lesson. And if you are from the southern part of the United States, the southeast, then you know about the magnolia, and certainly a very beautiful tree with a very beautiful flower. Now, these were carefully selected plants.
They were carefully selected, and they were selected so as to make the Capitol grounds an arboretum. And an arboretum is a place where plants, usually trees and shrubs, are grown for scientific or educational purposes.
Well, why don't we continue then with the second half of today's lesson and ask Marcy to read for us now.
Enhancing the building. The U.S. Capitol building inspires, but it can also intimidate. To mitigate that effect, Olmsted planted large southern magnolias at its base. These big trees look like little shrubs next to that building, Shimizu notes, but what they do is nest it into the landscape and soften harsh lines. Olmsted had several other tricks up his sleeve. Large shade trees line walkways, breaking up the lawn into smaller areas that seem less exposed. Around the ground's periphery are places where people can rest, such as the summer house, an ornate brick structure on the west front lawn. Olmsted didn't need instant gratification like people do today, Shimizu observes. He had the restraint, the discipline, and most importantly, the understanding. He could paint that mental picture and say, "The design for the Capitol grounds, it's going to outlive us. This is why we have to do it this way." And that ability is a God-given gift. You cannot learn that.
Thank you, Marcy. This is Advanced Studio Classroom. We are now on page 16, looking at the last part of our lesson on America's first landscape architect, Frederick Olmsted. We see here that the U.S. Capitol building inspires, but it can also intimidate. Have you been there? I've been there.
Yes, I've been there, and it is a very large building. You can see the structure with, you know, rectangular base and then a dome roof. Because it is so big, it can look maybe kind of scary or imposing, so that's what the word intimidate means. But Olmsted wanted to soften this effect, so that's why he used the gardens around it to mitigate that effect.
That is certainly the sense that I get when we were there. You can see that everything is well taken care of. There are cameras, too, to be found just about everywhere. There's lots of security, especially after 911. And it was in the past, when we were there many years ago, that you could enter the building after you waited in the line outside for, you know, maybe a couple hours, and you finally got in, you could give yourself a self-guided tour. You could take a self-guided tour, and you could walk around on the inside. You would even see senators, legislators passing by. One of those I happened to recognize because he was from Michigan. And I thought, wow, there he goes, you know. And I could have walked up to him and talked to him if I had the nerve to do that. But these days, since 911, you cannot take self-guided tours. All tours now in the Capitol building are guided. And it's an auspicious sight, isn't it?
I'm surprised that senator didn't say, "Hey, there's Troy Peterson."
Well, he doesn't know me from Adam, Bill.
I did like, Troy, the word mitigate there. Mitigate means to make something less harmful, unpleasant, or bad. And the example I think of is when I was there, you could walk along the sidewalks, and the trees along the sidewalks break up the view of the building. It's a large white building, but you're not so overwhelmed by it because these trees kind of break up the scenery for you. So, again, it's not so intimidating.
And, of course, directly out the backside, you have the mall. So there is lots of green space. You can walk, stroll, sit. People picnic. They play games, including baseball. I mean, this is a very large area that is there for U.S. citizens and whoever happens to be visiting the Capitol at that time to enjoy. So it inspires, but it also intimidates. So Olmsted, realizing this, wanted to mitigate that intimidating effect. And that's why he planted large southern magnolias at its base. And Shimizu then quotes here, what does she say?
She says the big trees look like little shrubs next to that building. And that's amazing because these are really big trees. And I just it lends itself to show that even though this was a big building, Olmsted really had a good idea of what he could do and what it would look like in the future.
And too, he brought in the use of the southern magnolia, which is a beautiful tree. In fact, it is the flower of the state of Mississippi, is the southern magnolia flower. And these trees are big and their blooms are large too. So I think he had a good taste in trees and knew that this tree would really help to offset some of the intimidating features of the massive U.S. Capitol building. So it says, she goes on to note here, but what they do, these trees, is nest it into the landscape and soften harsh lines.
So they make it fit closely together. As Bill said, it can look like a very big and imposing structure, but they help it to fit nicely into the natural surroundings, and they kind of frame around it.
Okay. So the phrase here, to nest something into, means what?
To bring it all together so that it fits in smoothly. You don't notice like a harsh change or something. It all flows together.
And this is kind of the reason we might use the word nest here, is because when you look at a tree and there's a nest in it, often you can't even see the nest in the tree. It's so carefully disguised. It looks like it's a natural part of the tree. Well, this is true of a good landscape artist as well. Everything designs and flows well so that it appears to be a part and parcel of the surrounding area. So it says that Olmsted, of course, as an artist, as a landscape architect, he had several tricks up his sleeve. We read in line 6 or 7 here.
This is an idiom that we will use quite often, I think. It's a more common one. It is to have a few secrets or surprises. We would also say you have an ace up your sleeve, and all that means is you have something that other people may not know about on how you would do something, or something that will help you to do a job better.
Okay. So if you find yourself in a difficult position and you share with someone, wow, what are we going to do? Your friend might reply, well, I still have a few tricks up my sleeve. There are still a few things I can do to get us through or get us out of this situation.
Sometimes we might hear the term a few tricks up their sleeves or up his sleeve. Maybe in sports, for instance, a team will pull out maybe a couple of trick plays or a special player late in the game to get the special advantage.
Okay, so having some plans or ideas that you can put into action in order to perhaps overcome something that is a huge challenge before you. And it was certainly a big challenge for Olmsted to design the grounds around the Capitol building, but again, he had a few tricks up his sleeve. And what were those tricks, Phil?
Well, he used large shade trees to line the walkways, breaking up the lawn into smaller areas that seemed less exposed. I think Bill mentioned that earlier. And also around the grounds periphery are places where people can rest, such as a summer house. So he used those things to make the Capitol building fit more into the natural surrounding and not seem so big and imposing.
Okay. In line 10 and 11, you used the word here in the article, around the grounds periphery. What is the periphery of something?
It's the outside area that people can walk around. It's the outside border.
Sure, sure. Okay, so there are places where people can rest. There's even a summer house and an ornate brick structure. The word ornate here kind of sounds like it comes from the word ornament or ornamental.
It does, in fact, have the similar root, and it's referring to that as highly decorated. Probably it's got very intricate or very complicated designs on it, maybe, and very beautiful, most likely.
Now, when you're creating a design, you may seem as if the design you're creating needs to somehow gratify, or it needs to satisfy an urge or a desire that you have at that time. But it really takes a great visionary, someone to see beyond their generation and their time, to realize that you're not working. You're not designing a plan that just fits within your period of time, but you want to make it timeless. You're hoping that your design will be timeless. And so it says Olmsted didn't need instant gratification like people do today. He had the discipline to stay with the project, and in this case, 15 years in designing these grounds, and not get caught up in just trying to satisfy himself right away.
That's a good term there, instant gratification, Troy. The act or condition of immediately getting what one wants, which usually means attention.
Hmm.
We would often also use the term look at the big picture, and that's just saying you're going to look at more than what is going to happen right now or right in the immediate future.
So the term instant gratification here I think is important. In fact, we use it in a very modern sense, don't we, Phil?
Yeah, I think sometimes we would often use that with children or with animals if we were trying to discipline them or train them. We don't always give them what they want right away. We expect them to work for it, and they have to learn how to be patient, and that's one way we train them.
We also say that people are often fixed on instant gratification. Why? Because we have instant coffee, we have instant breakfasts, we have instant foods of many, you know, variety. We have instant news. Now, of course, people can use their cell phones to immediately connect even to the internet. People, again, can get things instantly. If you want it, you just simply go out and buy it, and you've got it. And so it really takes discipline to say, well, you know what, I think I'm going to pay the price to do what is best by not gratifying my desires at this point. Give yourself, have the discipline to think. Have the discipline to stop and consider something long term. And oftentimes I am trying to teach my own children the importance of waiting for something. Well, Dad, I really want it. Can't you go out and buy it? Well, yes, I can, but I don't want to. Why? Because I want you to learn the discipline of channeling your desires through waiting for, you know, all good things come in time, we say. So instant gratification is one of those areas that we need to show self-restraint in.
Well, and I think it's really neat that this man, Frederick Olmsted, had such a great ability to discipline himself and not look for just instant gratification. Because in designing something like the Capitol grounds, it's going to live on for many, many years to come still. And so he had to think about what are the people in 100 years, 200 years going to be look when they look at this, what do I want them to see?
Good point. And that's how the article ends, doesn't it, in the last paragraph, Bill?
Yes, it says, the design for the Capitol grounds, it's going to outlive us. This is why we have to do it this way.
And it says that ability to see beyond your time is the ability of a God-given gift. You can't learn that, can you, Phil? You're born with it.
That's right. It's something that he didn't develop himself. I mean, he was born with this talent. And because he was able to do this, and he left a legacy that we still enjoy today.
Well, he certainly has left his mark upon American society, landscape, and culture. He is one of America's true living legacies. Well, we thank you for joining us today on Studio Classroom here in our advanced program, and we hope that you'll join us again next time. By the way, why don't you send us a line here at StudioClassroom.com? Just go to our website and you can send us an email and tell us how you like the program. Until next time, this is Troy,
Ethan,
Phil,
and Bill
saying goodbye.
Goodbye.